Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, I wanted to invite you to join a mastermind community for founders that I organize. While the schedule is pretty standard, weekly, hour-long calls, the format won't be anything like you previously experienced. I'll share more details in the next episode, but for now, if you are interested, click the link in the show notes, fill out quick information about you to reserve the spot, and I'll be in touch. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Viktor Porolnik about when to stop coding yourself and how to manage remote developers. Viktor is a developer and entrepreneur who's been in remote product development for almost a decade. He even co-founded a Ukrainian agency before, which grew to 80 people. I cannot imagine how you manage that. Since 2015, he's using his vast knowledge about working with Eastern European developers to help founders launch and scale successful software products. Welcome to the show, Viktor.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be on here. About the Ukrainian software company, I had the luck of never actually being there, even though I was mostly doing sales and consulting and working with founders. But, well, hats off to my co-founder on the ground there, who actually had to manage all these people. But it's been a beautiful time working with them.
Cool. So how did you start working with SaaS founders and specifically in this niche?
I always wanted to build software products. I was a developer, so I came from uni with software development, computer science background, but also a business background. So I've always wanted to do that. Originally, my family is from Poland, so I always had like a connection to Eastern Europe. And at some point, I felt super smart thinking, yeah, I think I can do something unique here that nobody else has ever thought of. I could hire Eastern Europeans. And then I literally went on doing every single mistake somebody who would work with remote developers from a slightly different culture would do. And well, fast forward almost 10 years later, and I have so many of them that I come on shows telling you about them.
I get a lot of founders asking this question. So when should I start hiring people? And to me, I talk about three things. When, first of all, when there's too much context switching while you're trying to be jack of all trades, basically, and we know how it drains your energy. So This would be number one. Then number two is when you find yourself doing lots of low paying jobs. For example, if there's something that you can reassign to someone else or delegate that, and you're gonna end up paying less. So that would be a second option. And then the third one, when you start a business, you're usually wearing all the hats. And you're handling marketing, sales, operations, finances, basically everything. But at some point, you'll be stretching yourself too thin, and it becomes obvious that your business is suffering from it. At the point where you think the business is suffering from this, you need to start thinking about outsourcing more and more work. What are some stages that the majority of founders come to you, Viktor, and ask for help with hiring a remote developer team?
Mm-hmm. So what you said is totally spot on. Whenever most people are coming to me when they feel completely overwhelmed with different jobs. And the thing with software development is that it really is a maker's task. You cannot write code for 15 minutes and then reply to a customer's email and then talk to someone to do some marketing or do a design job and then get back to coding for 15 minutes before lunch. It just doesn't work like that. You need to focus. You need to get things done. Once your business starts growing, you just more and more switch to a manager's role, right? And at this point, that's exactly what's happening. You're becoming overwhelmed with different jobs because there's too much and you feel like you're getting nothing done. And another thing that's really bad that a lot of people do, especially developers, and I know it, I've been doing that myself for a very long time, is working on code as an excuse not to do other things. In this essence, it's just procrastination. So you just start working on features that probably should have never been built at that stage, but you do it nonetheless, and you wake up 4 weeks later and none of your marketing got done. So that's definitely a sign when you should stop doing it yourself. Why? Because it helps reprioritize. Is that really necessary? Once you have to put a price tag on something, I'm hiring someone to do it. Is it really that necessary? And also another sign when people should just stop coding themselves or coding that particular feature is when they realize they need to learn a completely new technology, a completely new framework to implement that certain feature. Because we developers, we love learning. We just love trying out new stuff. But as business owners, it's absolutely a waste of our core time. Just as you said, the low-paying jobs, learning new technology, unless it's like a super core technology that you just need to stay on top for your business, it's a waste of your time. And then your business just grows and it's outpacing your own capacity. So that's the stage where most founders come to me and ask for help.
I often say that being a developer sometimes is a curse. So just because you can develop this does not mean that you should.
That's totally true. And I'm raising my hand. I've just done that last week again.
So I am of the opinion that founders usually, in majority of cases, are not able to scale their SaaS past a certain stage by themselves. You can grow to a few thousand MRR, but then past that stage, it's almost impossible to scale past that stage without a team. At what stage majority of founders come to you, Victor? What their average MRR before they decide to hire a developer team?
Pretty much exactly that point. So between $5,000 to $10,000 a month in MRR is when technical founders come to me. Why? Because they can bridge that gap up until there and code it themselves. But then it really does become hard. You do want to level up the front end game if you're a back end developer. You do want to scale your architecture better if you're more like a front end developer and back end is not your strength. There's just a lot of things that you are able to do but aren't right now. And it just takes more and more time. And customers are asking for features and you're just not getting them done. And you know you should be starting to focus more on marketing as well. And you're just not doing it. So that's exactly kind of the stage where things start falling apart when you're doing them yourself.
I also see that there are two different areas where founders can find themselves. The first one is they may say, I don't want to manage people at all. I don't want to work with people and I don't want to manage them because, you know, it is a hassle. And if you cannot manage people, it's hard to overcome. So what I say, and my husband, he was just like that because he said that it's much easier, it's much faster for me to do it myself rather than get someone else to do that. So to that, my response was, sometime in the future, you're still going to have to learn that skill. Like a few years down the road, for sure, you're going to grow, your business is going to grow. So you're going to have to learn the skill of management and leadership and working with people and getting through all of this stuff and having all those problems. So it is much better for you to learn it now and practice now than delay it few years when your business is going to be much bigger and that's going to be much more problematic for you to do this. So that's one area. Or the second one is they say, hey, I'm going to be just fine. I have this team of developers. They're really cool. We'll be just great together. I interviewed them and then we'll be just fine. So founders who are going to hire their first team or first team member, this is going to be a challenge. So if you think that that's going to be that easy, I'm telling you to think about what things that you need to put in place. I'm not saying not to hire. I am saying that you need to hire people to help you. It is just there are so many things that you need to think about now before you hire someone to avoid making all of those mistakes.
Oh yeah, that's totally true. It's going to be a steep learning curve no matter what you decide to do. But every single time that I have decided to bring somebody on for any given task, it's been a tremendous help. And as a developer myself, as a technical person who would rather just want to do their own stuff, I totally understand that. But it's just so important to have someone who can focus on it, that the value of bringing somebody on, given that you manage them well and prioritize well, will be so huge, because you just get things done. You get things done much, much faster than you ever could. Again, given that you work well with them, but that is something that's well worth learning. We'll invest some time into that for sure.
Let's talk about our options. So you mentioned there are freelancers, there are full-times, and then there's also, what are our options?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you do have a wide variety to choose from, right? So most people who are just starting out, they don't really know what their options are, who they can hire. They think it's either going to be an agency or is it a freelancer? And there's quite a few options, and we always advise people on those in depth. So if you only need a bit of occasional work and it's mostly within one technology stack, someone to help you out, then a freelancer is probably the best. If you have regular work on that same stack and a lot of it, obviously you should hire someone full-time remotely. However, then there's a different approach when you want to hire an entire team. You can either hire an entire team totally by yourself, do payroll by yourself, find and recruit them, which is a lot of work, or do something that we call outstaffing. It means you find a recruiter or a small firm who hire a developer for you. They send you one monthly invoice, but it's still your team. Super convenient, especially with all the HR hassle. And yet, it has all the benefits of working with your own team, because these are your developers. You work with them full time. They belong to you also, like, emotionally. They don't belong to an agency or something like that. And also another big benefit, developers right now usually need to be headhunted. If you want to hire good senior developers, most of them will have to be headhunted these days. And that can be quite expensive through a recruiter. If you do outstaffing, you don't pay any recruitment fees upfront. So if you want to hire really good developers, but you want to kind of keep your cash flow, especially in an early stage SaaS, you don't want to spend too much money upfront for recruiting an entire team, that may be a very good option. And then last but not least, obviously you have agencies. Most developers don't really want to work with agencies because they don't understand why that is a benefit for them. And yes, if you fall into one of the previous categories, especially if you really only work with one technology, then an agency probably isn't the best fit for you. But if you work with a few different stacks, if you really also want a quality assurance engineer here or a designer there, or some DevOps occasionally for a few hours as well, and also you don't have work full-time all the time, sometimes you have a project here and a project there, then working with a good agency actually super beneficial, because you can just kickstart that one team that you like, that you know, work with them for a month or two on a certain bigger feature set, and then that's fine. You don't have to keep them on your payroll, right? Because you just hired them for a project.
So what are some things that we should consider given first to our team, to our newly hired team?
Whether you're hiring a freelancer or a team or actually a full-time developer, the first things to hand out, especially since they're new to the code, would either be something completely new, a feature set that they don't have to finish, something that they can grasp, understand, and build from scratch. That's the easiest way for them to learn your business, your customers, and just dive into your code base, but actually get something done without messing too much up. The second thing you can do is have them refactor things. That's an even steeper learning curve for them to really get into the code base. And of course, once they're really proficient working on your code base, you can use them on anything else. But especially things to hand out first are things you are not good at. So again, if you're more of a front-end developer, hand out the back-end first. If you're more of a back-end developer, well, have someone for the front end. If you really hate CSS and you can't get things to look like you want them to, there are such good developers who are really great at this. They'll sit at this for 1 hour and they have it cranked out for you. And it's just a pleasure to work with those people.
In majority of cases, even if you think that you're pretty good at CSS and you can develop a front end, then do not. Because majority of cases, if you're not a designer, then you end up having a bunch of crazy looking stuff. And looking at some things, like I keep telling this to my husband, I keep bringing him up, but that's true. He thinks that he can do all of those things. If you think that you can, doesn't necessarily mean that you should. So please, if you're not really proficient in making things look pretty, don't do it yourself.
Yeah, that's true. There's some weird things out there in software.
So once we decide what kind of team we want to hire, what are some things that we need to have in place before we made the hire, during working with the team?
So before making a hire, the entire process of even understanding what we need, who we need, how do we find them, how do we make sure they're a good fit, is so once you understand, let's say you want to hire a freelancer or an agency, you should really understand what your goals are, also business-wise. That is very important to understand, because the developers will only understand you and will also only understand your features if you give business knowledge, if you describe your ideal customer. We're very often in this world where we think this all of this is obvious and we just write a few feature descriptions and everybody will understand that as we do. But there's a lot of context missing. Giving the entire business context, almost as if we were talking to an investor, is actually really helpful. And also even more, if you're talking about the business to another developer even, you understand immediately how interested are they? Do they understand your business? How's the communication here? Because all of this will actually impact your future working relationship. So it's super important. And then there's a lot of legal things. If you're in the EU, for example, and you really need to be paying attention to GDPR and things like that, make sure all of this kind of aligns and fits and ticks all your boxes. But I won't touch on that rather boring aspect here. We've written a very comprehensive playbook on like vetting and hiring developers that can be found on our website. But just to consider that there's a lot of other things in the back as well. However, once you start working with your team, the first time that you're actually working with other people on your code, what should be the mindset shift that you should go through from, oh, I'm writing this myself, to, oh no, I now need to collaborate somehow. So what a lot of developer entrepreneurs do, especially in the beginning, and in the beginning, this is actually a great, great ability, which only we developer business owners have, is just like tinkering while coding mentality. Like, we don't go in and define entire feature sets and write documentation. We have a certain goal in mind, and then we jump into code and try to get it done as fast and lean as possible. And if we decide, oh, there's a shortcut, there's a quicker way, we're happy to kind of let go of half of the original plan because this is easier. And that's great. It's actually perfect because it gets you to that MVP much, much faster, because this is actually a shortcut for all these feedback loops that non-technical founders have to make with their developers, like develop it. I'm doing it. Oh, I'm running into a problem. Oh, what do we do now? Oh, what are our options? And there go 2 weeks. And we just do that in our head, like in a few minutes, we inspect these scenarios. So that's great. However, once you're hiring developers, you are splitting that business and developer mind again. And you can't be doing this anymore. So you have to be aware of that. And you must think things through before you hand them off. You really need to understand where you want to be. What are the circumstances here? How are things supposed to work? I always say that you already should be a QA, a quality assurance engineer, before something's being developed. You should anticipate what users could be doing with this. And at the same time, you should not be micromanaging developers or correcting them too much. I know all of us have a certain idea or understanding of how code should be developed. And obviously it's good. It's very good to have code style guides. I'm not advocating against those. However, just don't correct people too much on the code they write. You should rather hire someone at first that actually works like you want them to work, is of the seniority that you want them to be, and then have them do their job. And especially if you're hiring someone who's much better than you, which is something that I, for example, always do. But gotta leave those people a breathing room and do their job very well, because then they'll be super fast and they'll actually do a really good job.
Two things I wanted to bring up here. What you talked about, sharing the context, basically, when we are not sharing the big picture view, then it's definitely going to be an opportunity for disaster, because then our developers do not understand how to connect the business problem with what they're doing, and then they're just doing for the sake of doing, developing the things. So I would say delegate problems and not tasks. So explain the big picture, the vision, what we're trying to achieve, and delegate the problem, and not say, hey, you developed this thing piece here, without explaining how this piece connects to the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And that's precisely where you get into documenting and documenting features the right way, where you always start with a business summary and you include user stories and acceptance criteria. So as a software developer, obviously, most of the time, I assume most of you have worked with this, have worked in a Scrum environment with user stories, with acceptance criteria, but then switching that context and actually writing those, it's not that easy, especially since, to be frank, on most projects where I have worked as a developer, these user stories weren't that great. So it's really worth looking up a few really good user stories, reading a few blog posts on that. How do I actually write those with meaning and with value? Because while writing a good user story, you should actually have to reflect on how is this supposed to work? How is this supposed to fit in? How is this actually bringing my user closer to a goal? And always include wireframes. Include references to the bigger user flow. Think about the shortest path to success for the user. That's really important here.
A few episodes ago, I interviewed Thomas Smail with FE International, and he is saying that when the companies that document their codes is much more likely to be more ready for sale. And even if you're not thinking about this right now, anything that makes your business ready for sale is better for your business, period, anyway. So if this is going to help your business anyway, just do that. So that's an interesting nugget of information that I picked up from that interview.
Oh, absolutely. If Thomas says that, then it's absolutely true. And especially if you want to sell your SaaS, and he definitely knows what he's talking there.
Is there anything else that we can discuss right now as far as preparing the documentation?
I think there's a lot that goes into this. So what I would recommend everybody to do is just read a few blog posts or a course, or download our playbook even, that's on our website. And there are some examples, and just examine how other people do that. And then you'll kind of understand what people expect and how to write meaningful documentation. There's no shortcut. There's no secret to this, no magic formula. Just got to learn how to anticipate what users will do, how other developers think, and how to convey that knowledge better.
Let's switch to talking about the management of the team. There is an interesting saying that says, people leave bad managers, not companies. And no one sets out to be a bad manager, right? But it's very easy to become one. So are there any interesting stories that you came across as far as learning to manage a remote team?
Certainly. It's actually not very easy. I'm still trying to figure things out. I think working with people is one of the most rewarding and at the same time, one of the most challenging things to do as a business owner. Trying to understand what everybody's like internal goals are and expectations, and kind of working your way around that and understanding if that aligns with yours, which sometimes it doesn't. One of the most important takeaways anyway, especially with outsourced developers, people that you don't consider your full-time employees, is to actually treat them as such, because there's a lot of times this mental barrier if someone's working within an agency, but you're not treating them as part of your team. But you should. That's what you totally should. And because the person working there feels that. So at the same time, they don't feel part of your team, and they don't feel part of your success, and they don't care that much anymore. And then these are the founders who then come to me and say, Victor, agencies don't work. That sucks because people don't feel part of my team. Well, did you ever fly over there? No, I have not. Why would I? How often are you getting on calls? Well, I just had 5 minutes last week, and now I don't really have the time for that. Okay. Have you ever had like a personal chit chat, remote beer session? I know you can't fly over there all the time, but did you do anything like that? Well, Victor, no, I haven't. Well, there's your solution. Go do that. Treat people like your own team, no matter what the legal relationship here is. And that's definitely my number one takeaway. And the number two takeaway is actually as often as you can, do fly over, do visit in person. Some startups or companies tend to just bring people into where they live or work, or do retreats in fancy places, which is cool as well. But everybody wants to show their hometown, their home country, share the bars that they like, show the sights of where they live, be a bit proud of their own town. So do fly over there and spend some really great time with them. And that will give you the single biggest ROI on your development team ever.
Now, that's if the development team are multiple people in the same place. What if two scenarios? Number one is I have multiple people scattered across the world. And then number two is I am a bootstrap founder. I have, 10K MRR, and I'm not necessarily looking to spend much more on anything expensive. What are my options then?
Well, absolutely. So in the first case, the retreats, if you have a lot of people in different places, then going to retreats, even if once a year, that's probably enough and cool. And if you don't want to spend money on that, obviously doing a lot of calls. What we do a lot is stand-up calls that are super important. So every morning, 5 minutes, everybody says what they have done yesterday, what they're doing today, and what's blocking them. Why is that good? It seems like you're repeating yourself every other day, but from what a person is saying they will be doing today in just 30 seconds and the next day what they have done yesterday, you can judge immediately if they're on track, if something is wrong. You feel that right away, even though you have not investigated their entire code and or backlog or something. So this is a great hack to keep up the team spirit. So what we've just released, a fun internal tool that we use in our Slack. It's called Stand Up Stories. And it allows people to record their own stand up, but asynchronously. You don't have to get on a call, because scheduling calls with people all across the globe, especially if they're pretty busy, it's not the easiest thing in the world, to say lightly. So you just hit record, you record like 30 seconds of what you've been up to today, of a fun thing you've done yesterday, or where you are right now for the vast amount of diligent nomads out there. And so that's it. You sent that. It's somewhat like Instagram stories, but for Slack and for your own team. And people can look through that and whenever they have time and enjoy and feel part of a team.
I've heard good things about also a tool for Slack Standuply, where it's automatically sending you daily notifications. Hey, what did you do? And then you can set it up the way that you want it to be. And then basically every single person replies with their responses every day.
Whatever works for you. I've made the experience that people tend to not really reply to a lot of automated notifications, but definitely works. So don't automate too much as well. That's definitely one of the takeaways. Because if you try to automate too much of the human relationship, people will notice that. People don't appreciate that. It sucks. I know. I would like to automate most of my human interactions as well, but it's not the same.
Tell us more about the meeting structure. What are our meetings besides the daily stand-up meetings? Do we do weekly, monthly? What's your overall best practices?
That, of course, depends how you're working with the team, how big your team is. If you're just working on a few things with a freelancer, or if you are managing 5 people full-time. But for a small development team consisting of, let's say, 1 to 3 people, you should be having about one stand-up every day, definitely a longer meeting every week, and most importantly, ad hoc, depending how you work, if you work in sprints or if it's Kanban or something totally different, whatever works best, is that whenever you feel like you need to brainstorm or start a new chapter, feature set, then it's definitely important to schedule some more time to give people a bit room to breathe and to understand and to examine what you're saying, the new business logic that maybe you want to develop. And then schedule another call like a day later or 2 days later so people have some time to have that sink in, to give this some thought. And then the second meeting will be much more productive. And you will also understand exactly, have they understood it? Is there something unclear? So definitely do these kinds of several calls, 1 or 2, right after each other, if you're starting some new things where you need to brainstorm remotely, because that's the hardest thing to do actually, right? So brainstorming in a room with a whiteboard, with everybody around, reading their kind of body language as well, having all the context needed, that's super easy, but this gets hard remotely. So that's where we usually advocate to meet in person, like once a quarter, when you discuss bigger milestones, bigger changes. However, splitting that up into a few shorter meetings works as well.
Here's a funny idea, especially for tech founders out there. Start asking your team personal questions, especially when you have those one-on-one meetings. I'm surprised how many founders do not know if their team members are married, not married, like do they have kids. You don't need to get into nitty-gritty of all of their personal lifestyle, right? But at least knowing this information is going to give you so much more understanding into why they're doing the things that they're doing, or what's their current setup, so that you can better understand what they're doing, why they're doing this. And I find so many founders just don't know. Are they married? I don't know. Do they have kids? I don't know. Do they have 5 kids? I mean, it's much different when your employee has 5 kids versus, you know, single.
Especially when they're working from home. Yeah, that's definitely the case. Now, yeah, don't hide in your closet. Meet your team members. Talk to them. A founder that I know who runs a very successful remote first agency, what he does is, and I think I'm telling that everywhere because it's just such a great hack, is he is ending every Friday at 4 p.m. with a remote beer on Skype or Zoom with everyone. And what that does is twofold. For once, it prevents remote people fizzling out from work earlier on Friday, which happens. Everybody's running a remote team knows that. That may happen. So now people just have to stay until that 4 p.m. Meeting. But at the same time, it finishes off the week with some light chat, with some social get-together, which is also something a lot of people need. Now, in the recent events during the pandemic, when a lot of people are going remote, I talked to a lot of founders asking them, how's remote for you? How's that working out? And a lot of founders tell me surprising things like, my employees don't want to work from home. They want to come back to the office. Whereas before, they wanted more time at home, more time working from home. They were asking for that benefit. And now that they have it, they don't want to work from home anymore. And I ask them, why? What's the number one reason? Everybody says the same thing, because at work, I have my friends. I don't want to lose my friends. I want to keep in touch with them and see them every day. And you should treat remote work exactly like that. You have to enable friendships. You have to enable personal connections, the water cooler conversations. They're super important. If you don't facilitate that, it will be hard to keep people motivated.
What setup do you recommend as far as communication? What are some tools? Slack, obviously. Anything else?
I usually divide that into three different setups. One is if you're just developing small features with a freelancer, then a lot of people are just going super wild and setting up Jira, Confluence, Slack, everything for one freelance developer to work 10 hours on your feature. And that's just overkill. Don't do it. I know it's probably wrong to use Google Docs, but use Google Docs. Use something like that. Maybe some notes in Git or whatever. Have one document with like a business overview, introduction to the project, documentation for everything, accesses, to-dos, the acceptance criteria, links to screens. Have just one comprehensive document that one person can take, read, understand without going anywhere else. And check off some things. So yes, this is totally not suitable for any team work, any bigger work. But if you're just working with one person, definitely do that. Plus email, Skype, or Slack, or whatever you prefer. Now, if you're working with one developer full-time, then you still don't have to go for the huge team setup. Either basic Jira, but also a Trello. That just works. If you want to save money, do it on Trello, but definitely use a wiki. At this point, do use a wiki with like accesses, with like descriptions of the entire application, with descriptions about your customer portfolios, their main goals, the main actions that can be done in your application. And it's fine to use a Google Docs document here again, but do have like one wiki. And then wireframing, actually my hack for wireframing is Google Slides. If I don't want to use anything super professional, it's super quick, it's basic, everybody has it, everybody can view it, you can comment on it, you can export it to PDF, you can present it, and you can even build clickable prototypes, you know, buttons and link them to a different slide. Super easy to get going. Because the most important thing is that you don't get stuck in trying to set up procedures, finding new tools, at least not for one developer. Now, that obviously changes once you have an entire team, especially if it starts growing past five people, then, you know, you have your entire Jira set up, probably multiple boards, a Confluence wiki, Slack, your entire DevOps procedure as well, obviously. And that becomes a whole other story, of course.
Let's talk about how do we actually start looking for those developers. Where do we start the search? What countries do we pay attention if there is a difference? Because maybe I know that you're biased, you're going to say Eastern Europe, but I know that there are many developers in South America. Any other thoughts here?
Yeah, so the countries, especially since you touched on that, I'm not actually going to say Eastern Europe because what's really important is that it fits your needs. And how can a country fit my needs? It can. One location, right? So you mentioned South America. So if you're on the US West Coast, it starts getting really hard to work with Eastern Europeans. West Coast is really far away. It's hard. It can work, but not necessarily. So Latin America is just much better suited for the time zone. I just have a lot of experience with Eastern Europeans. I'm not even going to say what country is better than others because that's a discussion that doesn't lead anywhere. But I just know that Eastern Europe is culturally very close to the West, which is excellent because you're picking up these discussions in between lines. You're getting the same context more or less. You don't have to explain yourself. And that's not because somebody else is dumb or not intelligent, or it's just a different culture. That's normal. Vice versa. They're probably explaining things that are super obvious to them and you're just not getting it. That's because there's a cultural difference and there's a lot of research on that as well. And that's why I personally like working with Eastern Europeans because they're super close to like rest of the European culture, obviously, and also North American culture. Very close. But again, don't force anything like that. If that means you need to stay up at midnight until midnight to work with your developers every day, that's not good. Do find something closer. If you speak Spanish or Portuguese yourself, then don't try talking to people who speak Polish or Ukrainian. You're much better off working with Latin Americans, for example. So it really has to be suitable for you, for your company, for your location. But what I wanted to say is that it does matter just because of that. So do keep that in mind. Where to find good developers. So if you want to hire full-time, I'm afraid most of the time you're somehow going to have to headhunt them. It's a very tough time for senior developers applying to you. It does happen, not that often though. How to vet developers or agencies. That's another pretty big chapter that in depth is discussed in our book. We have quite a few pages here with criteria that we use, with tips that we give. But most importantly, in my mind, really is communication, is getting along. Don't let a perceived technical superiority win somebody your position if you just can't get along with them. That actually is almost secondary. Like a team or an agency or a developer being good at what they do, that should be the standard. But on top of that, they need to fit your culture here as well. The fastest way, obviously, to find good developers, to find good agencies, to even understand what is the right fit for you, is that's something that we do.
Victor, tell us more about your company.
So at TrustRank, my company, what we do is we match software startups, and especially a lot of startups led by developers. We match them to tried and trusted tech teams or recruit developers for them so that they don't have to go through the entire hassle and pain to find good people, to search through platforms, to write RFPs, to vet, pre-vet, run test projects. So what we do is we go in depth, understand the business, understand what the goals are and all the circumstances that go into making that decision, and match them to someone very solid from our network, give tips, and make sure that relationship works out and that the business is growing.
What are some common pitfalls that you see founders make when hiring remote teams? Because I know so many founders, they're so eager to get this off their back so that they are like hiring their team and they think that, okay, now you guys handle that. I give all the powers to you and then cheers. And basically they check very rarely. Looks like they're doing fine. Everything looks like works. And then in the end, when you need to actually release everything and combine all the things together, things fall apart. You probably know a lot of stories like this, but what are some most common threats?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. And why is that? That's because of several reasons. And unfortunately, there's no easy fix, because one part, it's always a complex problem. One could say that, you know, the development team sucks, and that actually may be the case. Yeah, right. It happens. However, a lot of the time it's a mix of several things. One is that the founder doesn't really know or is not 100% aware how a certain feature should be working. Then supernaturally, you're going to go into a mode where you iterate on it, and that just seems to you that you never finish. But you just find something that should work slightly different or slightly different than what it's now. You release a feature, users test it, and they don't like it. And that just goes on into iteration mode forever. A second problem is that maybe even though you know what you need to have done, you don't document it enough. You don't give all the acceptance criteria. You don't have a clickable prototype ready. You don't give the business description. And then it's super easy to have misunderstandings. And those misunderstandings, again, lead into this iteration mode where you think some things are never done. Other things that happen quite frequently is what you just mentioned, that people just let go, never check anything, and then you don't have the opportunity to recalibrate. Because if you catch this iteration loop earlier, you can counter it. You can provide some more documentation. You can get on call. So the best thing you can do here is do these daily stand-ups. At least in the beginning, it may turn out that you don't need to be doing them later on, but definitely in the beginning, because you're trying to start a corporation, which is something very personal. you're trying to do that remotely, and then you're even letting them go do something completely on their own. And it's pretty obvious that they won't understand everything that you said. That's normal. That will happen. And you need enough time to calibrate, to refine that, to bring across context. And then once that works, once you got to know each other much, much better, then you can step off again a little, and because people understand your context more. And then you will be like two friends talking and understanding each other without, you know, pages and pages and pages of documentation. But you need to work on this relationship first. That's super important.
You've mentioned that they may not understand what you're saying. So I find it often that even when the team does understand what you're saying, but they still apply their own filters. So I actually did a research on this. Why two different people can hear two different things, even though the person says exactly the same thing to different people, and they take two different ideas and information completely. And then if you go back and ask, oh, how did you come up with this? I didn't say that. And then because people have their filters from all of their experiences, you know, their cultural filters, how they're used to doing things, and they apply all of those filters and they think through what you're saying and add all of those filters to what you're saying. And so that's why those things can end up being completely different from what you said. So over communication is really important managing any team, especially Absolutely. When you're on different continents, different time zones, different cultures, even if you're within the same culture. How many times a wife and a husband hear the same thing, or like husband says one thing, but then the wife gets completely different thing. That's just because we have our own filters. So over communicate. I cannot stress this enough.
Absolutely. I mean, the simplest example you could give is you as an American telling a European to design a socket for a plug, like a power plug, power socket, right? So you just say, so this piece holds a power socket. So how do you envision it versus how does your developer implement it? Well, completely differently, because they have a completely different context. Our power sockets look totally different than yours. Likewise, the developer may just have eaten pizza. So when you say we need food and you've just had your salad, they think about something totally different and you don't know it, because within the company, you would have just had the same pizza for company lunch or whatever. So for you, it's clear within your business, but you don't even know what that person has been doing an hour ago, where they were, if it's raining, if the sun is shining, what mood they're in. And that's exactly why these misunderstandings happen. And of course, I'm talking about weather here, but what I mean is really business context, because it works just the same way.
Where can listeners know more about what you do and connect with you?
I am obviously on LinkedIn, Victor Perolnik. Go to my website if you want to download our playbook, which is free, and basically mentions all of this and a bit more, and gives bullet points and step-by-step descriptions. And well, most importantly, if you have any questions about this, just write me an email. It's vp@trustring.com. I'm happy to answer questions and just help people out and help people scale their software, because that's what I love doing.
Victor, thank you so much for all this time and all of your wisdom. This has been great.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side. This is also the easiest problem for you to fix because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, nataliluneva.com/team. nataliluneva.com/team.